Today's Tuesday, June 10th.
2014, it's a regular meeting of the Los Angeles Board of Police Commissioners. I'd like to call the meeting to order in honor and with a moment of silence for the officers that were just brutally gunned down in our neighboring state over in Las Vegas. And I'd like to start with a moment of silence for those two officers. Thank you. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Thank you. Good morning. Let the record reflect. Commissioner Soboroff, Madison, and Saltzman are present, and we have a quorum. Number one on the agenda is commission comments.
Commissioner Madison.
Good morning. This past Sunday, Commissioner Saltzman and I had the honor of representing the Los Angeles Police Department along with the police chief and some other officers at the Pride Parade as it went through West Hollywood. That is one of my favorite parades because I think to the extent that it supports and encourages people to be who they are, there's usually a wonderful celebration there and just a mix of people from everywhere representing all walks of life. And so, as I said, it was an honor to represent the police department at that event.
Mr. Saltzman.
Thank you. I just want to concur with Commissioner Madison's comments and thank the department for its participation. Thank the chief for his participation and for encouraging department members to participate. We are a far cry from where we were not too long ago with the LGBT community, and I appreciate that and thank the chief for his leadership on that issue.
I want to acknowledge and commend the entire department on the events of yesterday and how that unfurled without injury, without damage. Here's a guy with an assault rifle that by all means could have been apprehended in many different ways, in many different circumstances. In full view of the world on television, and I thought that the tactics and the communication and the camaraderie and the step-by-step process that was taken is something to be very, very, very proud of, and the result was a good one. So I want to commend everyone on that. Let's move ahead.
Thank you. Item number two on the agenda is the report of the Chief of Police, Chief Beck.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning, Chief.
Thank you not only for your participation in the Pride Parade this weekend with the Los Angeles Police Department, but also for your comments on yesterday's barricaded suspect at the end of a pursuit. I truly believe that the men and women of the Los Angeles Police Department handle those types of tactical situations better than anybody in the world, and I have the ultimate in confidence in them. I also want to echo Commissioner Soboroff's sorrow over officers Beck and Soldo who were killed from Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. You know, Las Vegas is a sister city in law enforcement to the Los Angeles Police Department. We work seamlessly with them in issues of enforcement. They are a great agency. I have nothing but respect for Doug Gillespie, who I see as a personal friend and mentor, the sheriff there. And you know, we feel their loss, and it is truly, truly sad. We wear the mourning band today because of them, and will, of course, until the funeral is completed. On to my normal discussion of crime. Crime is down. In total, 7.1% in the city of Los Angeles. That is a combination of a 3.4% decrease in violent crime and a 7.9% decrease in property crime. We have a couple of areas that we are putting continued emphasis on. We have a 6% increase in homicides as compared to year-to-date. To give you an idea what that means, we've had 119 as of Monday as compared to 112 year-to-date in 2013. That's still a significant reduction from not only our five-year average, but from 2012. But we look forward to bringing these numbers down even further as we move forward throughout the year. Shootings are down in the city. Excuse me. And Part 1 crime is down in all four of the bureaus. Gang crime is down 17% as compared to 2013 and an amazing 31% as compared to 12. Categorical uses of force are down in the city about 41% as compared to last year. And officer-involved shootings are down 36% as compared to last year. So those are both good numbers. As I've been doing the past few months, I report on traffic collisions. Overall traffic collisions were about even at a 0.2% increase. DUI-related traffic collisions are down by 12%. Hit and runs are down by 9%. Motor vehicle versus pedestrians down 2%. And bicycle-involved traffic accidents are down 12%.
Chief, I know it wasn't your fault, but it was your collision out there on the freeway. Was that included in these statistics or no?
It was five miles outside the city limits, so that that one belongs to the Highway Patrol.
Okay, just saying.
I know my security aide was pleased to add to their statistics and not ours. Yeah, anyway, that concludes my report.
I bet it does.
Thank you. We do have one public comment card. We have Mr. Herman.
Welcome, sir.
Good morning, and thank you for having us all here this morning. But I believe there's a small error in the data due to crime, or I should say hit and run capital of the world, which is Los Angeles. So if we're going to conduct business in an orderly fashion to protect the public from hit and run, wouldn't you agree with me that the issue regarding DUIs comes from our local council? If they continue to provide us with permits for businesses to serve alcohol for convenience, do you not find that offensive to the public? For we, the public, know how to manage our alcohol, the same as any officer here does as well. When we can't drink, we have a friend drive us home. If we cannot personally regard ourselves as being in danger to the public, we are. Take, for example, Jose Weezer, $185,000 DUI. So as an advocate on behalf of the public and in public interest and for public business, I believe that the issue back in April 8th, a couple of gentlemen here were talking about how they were injured on a bike. This continues. So if the interest of the public is in the hands of our Los Angeles Police Department, I suggest that you continue to provide accurate consistency of data so that persons such as myself and those who ride bikes, those who are elderly, those who are disabled, are safe on our streets at all times. And don't get me wrong, we all enjoy our refreshing drink, Mr. Beck, and yes, you are doing a good job, but you're coming up for re-election, and so we're going to keep that in mind and on the record. And again, off topic, I'm voting for Ashley's Swearinger for controller. Sorry, Mr. Perez. Your time is over. Thank you.
Item number 3, the report of the Executive Director, Mr. T. Fink.
Morning, Mr. President, members of the Commission. What I'd like to do again is to highlight the upcoming community meetings for public input related to the request for reappointment by Chief Beck. We have 3 of those scheduled. 2 of them are this week. Tomorrow night, June 11th at 6 p.m., the meeting will be held at Westchester Senior Center, 8740 Lincoln Boulevard in Los Angeles. And then the following evening, June 12th, at the AGBU Manoogian Demergian School, 6844 Oakdale Avenue in Canoga Park. And that'll also be a meeting where Councilmember Blumenfield will be in attendance along with the Topanga commanding officer and the Valley Bureau commanding officer. Then our next meeting will be July 8th at 6 p.m. at Lincoln Heights Senior Center, 2323 Workman Street in Los Angeles. And the public is encouraged to come and provide their comments to the commission. That can also be done via email, and the email address is all lowercase, reappointment at lapd.lacity.org. That concludes my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Item number four is the report of the Inspector General, Mr. Bustamante.
Thank you, Commissioners. A brief update on our suspicious activity reporting audit. The Commission may recall that last year we completed a report analyzing the department's processes for collecting suspicious activity reports, reporting for intelligence-related matters. What we did prior to that audit is we had met with several of the stakeholders in the community and asked for their input when fashioning that audit. Since we're coming about that process again, we'll again endeavor to meet with all the stakeholders in the community. We've already met with the Public Affairs, Muslim Public Affairs Council, the Council on American Islamic Relations, been to several mosques, been to the ACLU for meetings on the subject, and are coordinating right now with the Human Relations Commission to identify locations throughout the city where we can meet and discuss the matter before we initiate this audit. And I believe the audit will probably kick off in a few months, and it'll take about 5 to 6 months to complete. We are also working closely with Chief Downing's shop to make sure that we have access to all the documents, and he is, again, as he was the first time, willing and wants the process to be examined, and we will keep you apprised of any developments. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. We do have one public comment card. We have Mr. Herman.
Good morning. My concern has to do with a violation of the Brown Act, or Ralph M. Brown Act. And in regards to that, Mr. Inspector General, on behalf of the public, I find it rejecting, offensive, when the Sergeant of Arms in a public meeting decides to grab your constituents and remove them from a public meeting due to their garment. Now, grabbing a person in a public meeting, I find that not realistic, but I'm stating it for the record today because I filed a grievance with the City of Los Angeles for Sergeant of Arms Mr. Duarte for grabbing me by the arm. And I don't take that lightly because, again, the Brown Act under 94-550 to 94-563 and under Measure R that we all voted for the record, is appropriate. We, the public, demand that we're not bullied, harassed, intimidated, threatened by any sergeant of arms in a public meeting. Because without the result of the appropriate action of this public to speak and be heard as activists, as independent constituents who wish to disagree in opposition to something that they don't favor, we have a right, and we wish to be heard. And then back in Van Nuys on Friday when I was there during a council meeting, a young little girl asked me to say this. Officers, where are the stickers? This is Valarosa Liliana. I asked the police for stickers because they make us happy. I ask you, protect my rights and protect the rights of this little child and give us stickers so that I can smile and be happy. Because every day when I come in here to work,
Mr. Herman, that's not relevant to this item, okay?
I completed my topic, sir. Thank you.
Item number five consists of information items and filed items relative to noise variances and special event permits submitted for the period ending June 6, 2014. Item number six, presentations. Do we have any presentations?
Yes, we do. We have a presentation today. It's my honor and pleasure to present to one of our employees who's retiring after 25 years of service with the city, Karen Heisel. Karen, please come forward. Karen's a senior management analyst one. Here. I'd like to tell you a little bit about Karen and her career with the city and where she's going to go in her retirement. Karen began her employment with the city in March of 1989 as a clerk typist in the personnel department. Worked there for a period of time, and very quickly she was promoted to a park ranger and went through the Rio Hondo Police Academy and was given peace officer status as a park ranger and provided service in that venue. Then she promoted to the position of management analyst, and she went to the Department of Aging for a short period of time. Then she returned to Recreation and Parks for 2 years as an assistant to the chief park ranger, then 4 years managing the Griffith Park Film Office, where she assisted with numerous productions each month in Griffith Park. In 1996, she came to the LAPD as a management analyst and served in the Planning and Research Division, Scientific Investigation Division, Administrative Services Division, and Commission Investigation Division. In 2000, she was promoted to Senior Management Analyst with the Board of Police Commissioners, where she's worked for the past 14 years. During that time, Karen has had a variety of tasks and been an integral part of our commission operation. She was initially assigned to monitor the federal consent decree compliance and all the audits that came in. She built a tracking system to manage those, because back in those days, we had to have a audit submitted to the commission by a certain date.
Extra time granted for great service.
See, Karen, they only wanted you to talk 2 minutes. I'm sorry, you're done. But the this was a real critical task, because believe it or not, the federal monitor would ding us if we did not have those audits tracked and managed in an appropriate way. And Karen developed a great system to help us with that. She also was involved in the developing and processing of a request for proposals for official police garages, which is a very intricate process. And then for the past several years, she has done the work, staff work, to develop the fees that the official police garages charge in the city of Los Angeles. Beyond that, she also assisted in the operation emergency plans for this building. She also assisted in the transition moving from Old Parker Center into this building for all the commission and commission investigation division. And for those in the building, if you ever heard that squeak box come on that goes throughout the building and someone say, attention, attention, fire drill, that was Karen. So we'll have to find a new voice for the building now that Karen is retiring. But she's been a great employee. She's been active in doing a lot of things, and we're going to wish her well as she and her family move to East Texas. And she has a brand new granddaughter with her daughter with grandson with her daughter today, and they're excited about making that transition. They're all going to go to East Texas and live happily ever after. Congratulations, Karen.
If I could have 2 seconds, I would just like to say it's been great. It went by so fast. And I've had great coworkers. A lot of them are here right now. Thank you so much. Sorry. And I'd like to share with you my perspective working for the board. The board is a great team of volunteers. And most people don't realize they are volunteers. And we're their staff. And we prepare reports all week. At the end of the week, they sum them all up in one book that's about this thick, and then they get to spend their weekend reading it and come back here on Tuesday and make decisions. So I can't say enough how much we appreciate the commissioners. And again, I just want to thank my coworkers. You've been like my family, and I'll miss you all. Thank you so much.
And commissioners, I have a certificate for you to present to Karen
sure.
And the appropriate picture.
And bring up your daughter and your grandson.
Judah.
Right?
Keep rooting for the Clippers, even when you move to Texas. Only request.
Okay, we're now on item number 7, which is consent agenda items, and we have no items. We're on item number 8, regular agenda items. Would a commissioner wish to pull an item as special for discussion, 8A or 8B?
Commissioner Saltzman?
I would like to pull for discussion item 8A, and I would move for approval item 8B.
Second.
All in favor? 8B?
Aye.
Okay. We will begin with 8A, Department's Report, dated May 30th, 2014, relative to Operations Central Bureau Narcotics Enforcement Detail Command Accountability Performance Audit, IAID number 13-043.
I hope you have your emotional body armor on, okay, because this is a tough one and a serious one.
Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning. Chief Beck, Mr. Bustamante. I'm Lieutenant Cheryl Barada, and with me today is Detective 3 Jose Ceja. We're assigned to Internal Audits and Inspection Division and here today to present the Operations Central Bureau Narcotics Enforcement Detail Command Accountability Audit. Also here today representing Operations Central Bureau's Deputy Chief Jose Perez and all the Operations Central Bureau Area Commanding Officers and OCB Gang Impact Team Lieutenant Officers in Charge. Internal Audits and Inspection Division developed Command Accountability Performance Audits, also known as CAPAs, to address risk management issues, assess operations, and provide timely information to department management. This CAPA is the first in a series of quarterly Bureau NED CAPAs to be performed department-wide. As you are aware, regular command accountability audits are performed on gang enforcement details. A couple of years ago, we self-imposed regular command accountability audits on our area vice units and narcotics enforcement details. Prior to conducting the audit objectives were reviewed with staff of the IG's office, and they agreed with the objectives. We met with the commanding officer, Operations Central Bureau, and explained the audit's methodology and requested input regarding any additional areas requiring evaluation. This audit was comprehensive and took time to complete. The audit included the evaluation of arrest reports, consistency of information, search and Ramey warrant packages, standards-based assessments, evaluation of officer roles, evaluation of supervisor roles, adherence to confidential financial disclosure requirements. The time period reviewed was January 1st through March 31st, 2013. The high-risk civil rights-related standards, such as articulation of reasonable suspicion and probable cause to arrest, search and seizure, admonition of Miranda rights, were met. Also met were the high-risk standards related to magistrate approval of search Ramey warrants, evaluation of confidential informants, and adherence to the confidential financial disclosure requirement. The objectives where standards were not met are administrative in nature and would not impact the prosecution of the respective cases. They are related to documentation of oversight, internal controls, and accountability. They involve objective 2B, warrant tracking logs, was 60%. Discrepancies were related to documentation. Objective 2D, employee comment sheets, 4% compliance. Personnel evaluation comment sheets were completed. However, in some instances, the comment sheet did not include dates and times, enabling us to determine if a comment sheet was completed within the 7 days requirement. And a few did not include language specific to the supervisor's duties and actions. Objective 4, standard-based assessment, 62%. Employee rating reports were closed beyond the 90-day limit, which has been a constant department challenge. However, a recently completed SBA audit that will soon be presented to you has shown improvement. Objective 5A, detective activity logs, officer roles, 42%. A gang narcotics division order number 2, 2009, requires that certain detailed information be included on the logs. Some of the logs reviewed did not contain that information. Objective number 5B, supervisor daily reports, supervisor roles, 8% compliance. Office of Operations, Operations Order Number 1, 2012, which is a fairly new directive, requires that the supervisor of each area specialized unit name the on-duty watch commander they briefed at start of watch and at end of watch in their supervisor's daily report. The findings were presented to the commanding officer, Operations Central Bureau, and the assistant to the director, Office of Operations, who were in general agreement with the results. The discrepancies identified were investigated, and corrective measures were taken.
When do we get the next one of these? In 3 months?
They're in about 1 year cycles, sir, every 12 months. So we're doing bureau by bureau, so there's four bureaus, so we do one every quarter.
I mean, my first comment is that we're going to need this to see that that these areas are addressed and not wait a year.
Right.
We should put that on whatever agenda to have you guys come back in a period of a couple months.
Will do.
Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you very much for the overview. I just feel that I have to characterize this in some way, that of all the audits that I've seen in the however many months that I've been here, this is the one that I think has the worst scoring, administrative though they may be. Mm-hmm. It suggests that in some instances there was language that was canned language, which indicated that there really didn't appear to be much knowledge, individual knowledge on the part of the person doing this evaluation. One of the things that, as an overview, and my colleague here, I'm sure, has some very detailed questions, and I will come back in, but as an overview, my concern is that it doesn't appear that at the top of however this is set up, that there's necessarily an attention to detail. That's what it indicates in terms of the administrative missing pieces. A new directive that you mentioned, which falls in the area of why we only had the 4% compliance, because this was new, or
that was the 8% compliance.
So the evaluation of the supervisory roles was 8%.
Yes.
And it suggests that when a new directive comes down, that maybe there should be a big meeting instead of it coming down by paperwork. Maybe that's how it happened. But when something as important as this happens, maybe there's the time when everybody gets together. I do want to commend you all for the 100% compliance on the financial disclosure for those who are involved in the gang activities, because that, of course, would have been a big concern. And that one, I think, consistently, there's 100% compliance. And so somebody is really listening on that one. I agree with Commissioner Soboroff. It feels like this area should be audited quarterly until we get better compliance, because I've not seen as poor a result as this from the department at all. And I think that a quarterly audit would result in not only a more immediate turnaround, but I think a more thorough turnaround.
Madam Commissioner, we will do a 3 to 6 month follow-up on the objectives that were low in compliance. It's a standard of ours. If we find these kind of findings, we will regularly go in and do an inspection to see improvement and continue to do so until we see the improvement. But we do look at each bureau every 3 months, so that's why there was the 1 year statement that we would come back into OCB to do a comprehensive. But we will look at anything under 90% on the objectives.
Anything under 90% you'll look at and report back to us in an audit? And how often, how frequent will that be?
If we go back in 3 months because we want to see improvement, and I'm sure that Chief Perez will have a plan of action to report to you, but we will go in 3 months. It'll take us probably about 2 months, 3 months. So you'll probably see the results here in commission within 6 months.
Okay. And my last comment, and then I'll turn it over, is it's a question. On the final page of Chief Perez's report, it says the individual interdepartmental correspondence from the five concerned OCB subordinate commands are attached here too. I don't think they were attached to ours. And I'd be very interested in seeing how each commander evaluated and responded. I'd like to understand what the fix is going to be.
Commissioners, if I just may add, part of the audit process, we request an informal response and a formal response. I personally take the informal response from each one of the areas. I talk to the narcotics lieutenant or sometimes the vice sergeants, D2s, D3s, when we do the vice audit. And whatever findings we have, I talk to these individuals. I let them know what the problems are. I let them know what the policy is, and we try to fix it as we go along. It's kind of part of the audit process. There's an axiom in auditing that that which gets audited gets fixed, and that's what we're trying to do. That's why we have internal audits and inspections division to help fix these problems. I know 12 months seems like a long ways off, but, you know, when we audit West Bureau NED, the information makes its way to Central Bureau NED, and it kind of it gets there before we do. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, the problems are being fixed. So I know some of these compliance rate may seem low, but it is.
Seem low. They are low.
Oh, no, they are low. But, yeah, it's part of the audit process. You know, that's what we have internal audits and inspections.
Just as a follow-up before Commissioner Saltzman gives his comments, I don't have any concerns that when you come back to us that these scores are going to be vastly improved. Mm-hmm. What I think that's important is that we take this as a lesson, because the questions that we will ask you is not only is to receive that information, is how'd you do it? And why wasn't it done before? And how, and this is not just a learning experience or life lesson for this situation, but how can others know how to do this without having to go through this process? So, Mike, you know, I'm convinced that these numbers are going to go from 4 to 94 and 8 to 98, okay? But I want to know how you did it and why you didn't do it initially.
Absolutely.
Commissioner Saltzman?
Well, my question was, were there five other reports that we were supposed to see or comments from the command?
Because
we
didn't get that. I should have taken a seat. I apologize. What we do is we ask for a response from the Bureau. It's a Bureau audit, and how they compile that is up to them. And in this particular one, OCB responded to us, and it's attached on mine. And I apologize if it's not on yours. Okay. It will be from now on. They absolutely all responded, and the Chief of Operations Central Bureau responded with one interdepartment correspondence with all of the responses of his commanding officers. So we did get a comprehensive report back from them, and I will make sure that it's attached in the future.
Okay. I'm going to turn this over to Commissioner Saltzman, and I just want to make sure, because I'm the only thing that I can do to convey to you is that although I'm sitting here and whatever this look is that's on my face, this is a reprimanding tone. I don't want to make it appear as it's anything that this is dissatisfactory. This is just, it's not good. In fact, it's pretty bad. You did well on some things, but the things that you didn't do well on, we want to be able to execute our roles to make sure that we're giving the proper oversight. And what can't happen, and I think this is what Commissioner Soboroff is speaking to, what can't happen is we cannot go through another cycle where we see metrics like this. Can't happen, because then it reflects not only on the department, but it also reflects in terms of how thorough was our oversight. So what I'm asking for is, I got that we might not see an actual report for 6 months, but you have to hear from us, and in our tone and what we're delivering is to you is, you must fix this. This has to be fixed, administrative or not. It suggests that there's something bigger that could be wrong, and we don't want to go there. So what we want to say is, oh, maybe this is a glitch. Let's get it fixed immediately. And not having those five reports is what I think I'm lacking to know which commands are responsive in a good way, and which commands are kind of, well, we'll get around to it. Maybe none of that has happened. Maybe it's all 100%. We're going to address it right away. But I'd like to know, as we go deeper into the organization, that this is what we're counting on. And I will say to you, help us help you, because Lord knows we don't want to do anything but help you.
I would like to add that each of the areas immediately responded, and their responses were very thorough. And we requested Operations Central Bureau to prepare a compilated report, and that is in the interest of the chain of command and making sure that everyone in the chain of command is aware of what their responses are and everything.
And Commissioner, on a more nuts and bolts level, like I said, I talked to each, you know, individual narcotics lieutenant or supervisor at the vice units, and we communicate right away. And immediately, if it has something to do with like a form that was used incorrectly, the information gets out there, and the right form is immediately implemented. So, yeah, it is constant dialogue in the audit process.
Thank you.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you. I have a few comments, and then I hope we'll hear from Chief Perez in response in general on the audit and to the comments that we've made. I want to thank the auditors. It obviously was a thorough and difficult audit. I appreciate the work that went into that. I also want to thank the many command officers who are here today, showing your appreciation for the seriousness and the difficulties in this audit. We don't often see this kind of a turnout, and given the nature of this audit, I appreciate it. I'm sure my colleagues do as well, and appreciate your hearing what we have to say and it reinforcing, I imagine, what you already know, the work that you need to do. I also, on a positive note, share Commissioner Madison's positive response to Objective 6, adherence to the confidential financial disclosure requirement. That's something the Commission obviously had quite a bit of involvement with respect to the consent decree and with our ability to get out from under the consent decree. It was a very difficult thing to implement, and I know that, and appreciate how much work must have gone into getting that result, and I thank you for that. On the other side, a few comments, and I'm hoping Chief Perez will be able to help me understand this. If I understand right, the characterization of many of the problems in this audit is that they're administrative, and as a result, it's sort of a paperwork issue as opposed to a substantive. And that is true, I think, for some of the things, but I think not for some. And I think it's, and even for those where it is true, I think it's worth talking about in stepping back from it and talking about in general terms. My approach on this is not to focus on any of the particular specifics in the audit. The department's responded. As Commissioner Soboroff said, we're confident the corrective measures are being taken. My concern is, stepping back, is systemic. These audits, this audit in particular, and pieces of this, and the audits that we see routinely, relate back to items in the consent decree. And as I look out at the command officers here and think about this, I'm curious how many of the command officers who are in the positions they're in now were in the positions they're in now when we were under the consent decree. And the reason I raise that question is the issues in this audit suggest to me that there is some potentially widespread lack of attention to the items that were being audited, and some perception perhaps that the things that were being audited were paperwork, not particularly important, as long as the work was getting done. And that's not my view of this audit, and I think Commissioner Madison's highlighting the canned language in 2D is a very good example of that. We haven't seen canned language problems in an audit in quite some time. And when we used to see those quite a bit, my experience was they were tip of the iceberg problems. That if we were seeing canned language that was caught by the auditors, that suggested a fairly widespread problem with respect to how the department, how the officers and command officers were in fact implementing what those policies were. And so that one in particular, which I don't think of as administrative, concerns me greatly. I appreciate there's a response here, but it makes me wonder about the tip of the iceberg problem. And given the time that's passed since the consent decree and given turnover in the department, it's one of my questions for Chief Perez is, can you help us understand that? How many of the command officers who would have been in the positions they're in now under the consent decree, to the extent there are a variety of new people who may not appreciate the seriousness of these, how are you responding to that? And I'd be happy to hear, I'd like your response to that, but I'd also like to hear you talk more generally about the audit as well.
Okay. Let me start with this, sir. If you take a look at the command staff of Central Bureau, myself, my partner, and three of my commanding officers were at one time gang impact team leaders. So we were lieutenants of the officer in charge. As a matter of fact, I started the first one in Central Bureau with Captain Tom Runyon at the time. We saw it coming. And one of the things when I started that at Rampart was that we knew that no matter how much work went into reducing the gang crimes, the intervention work that we were doing, everything would be measured by our compliance with the consent decree. And Captain Runyon was very astute on that point, passed it on to me, and that's something that while the consent decree may not be here, the spirit of it is, and we also understand that Judge Fees has delegated that responsibility to the police commission. So first and foremost, I can only tell you from the hearts of myself, my partner, my commanding officers, we have embraced the consent decree at different times in our career. Whether we were in that position then is not as important as that we're in that position now, and it's up to us to make sure that that philosophy still carries through our chains of commands. And I can assure you that that is definitely the tone that is set, not only throughout Central Bureau, but throughout Office of Operations. Chief Pacinger has been very clear with that piece whenever we're dealing with these audits. Secondly, given that background that we have, I got to tell you, more than frustrated, we were really embarrassed when this audit came out, to the point that it's an unprecedented step that we've taken, having all the command officers here. We also looked at it as, okay, we spilled the milk. How are we going to fix this? And that's the part that we're focusing on the most. And so we've taken some steps because while this impacted Central Bureau, is how is this impacting the other three geographic bureaus that we have in place? So to that end, I've met with my partners. We have discussed this. Some of the actually all the steps that are being implemented in Central Bureau are being replicated by them in order to prevent this. So more than we want to go, much like in fitness, you want to prevent it. So we're going into prevention mode with that. First, I've spoken to all of them, all the gang impact team leaders, lieutenants, their supervisors are meeting personally with the bureau chiefs. They're holding a meeting. I'm meeting with my folks tomorrow. We have a matrix that we've put together. It lists where we're in compliance, where we weren't, and what the discrepancies were, what the actions taken to remedy that situation is, and what our expectations are going to be. Yeah. We have discussed this. I've discussed it with my staff, discussed it with the other bureau chiefs, and they're on board, and we'll be moving forward with this. They will be meeting with their folks within a couple weeks here. So everybody's going to come together, and that's going to create the consistency that we need department-wide. Yeah, because you have four different bureaus, 21 different divisions within that, and that'll help create that consistency that we're looking for. Second thing is, we took a look, and we noticed that there was a little bit of confusion between a couple administrative pieces within the department manual, search warrant manual, detective notice. Detective notice specifically speaks about, in the warrant tracking log, that it says the supervisor that approves the warrant, the affidavit, is to be the supervisor in the log, the warrant tracking log. Department manual section references a supervisor. Yeah, so we've had the supervisor that was putting it in. The good thing is all the warrants were tracked in. The bad thing is it wasn't the right supervisor that was tracking it in. So that's a quick and easy fix. We're creating that with inconsistency. We're also making a change that's being amended on the warrant tracking log, rather warrant checklist that we have. So we'll go through there, and I'll be able to, one of the things that they'll check off on. So that's a quick, simple fix. Because when I look at this, 6 out of the 8 that we failed, we shouldn't have failed. I mean, we shouldn't have failed any of them, but 6 of them are really quick, easy fixes that we can do. One of the other things in terms of the consistency within the information that we have in the reports, the receipts, property report, the arrest report, is, you know, there's a warrant review officer in the order, but it hasn't really been designated based on what I've looked at. So what we are mandating now is when they send in the TAC report that gets approved by us at the Bureau, it's going to designate who the officer is who's responsible for bringing all those reports together and making sure that everything matches and that everything is on board. So we'll have the accountability phase so that 3 months, 6 months down the road, we're going to Jose Perez and saying, hey, you were the guy. What happened here? And that will eliminate a lot of confusion. It'll assign responsibility to someone, more importantly, assign the accountability. And I think that's going to help bring that piece together. The other thing that we looked at is in terms of comment cards, two things, if I could address that, one specifically to your point there, is one, within the comment cards, the biggest failure that we had was not listing the times for search warrant time. If we would have done that in itself, we would have been in compliance. Yeah. So we're going, one of the things we're going to discuss, we're going back to the basics. We're going to discuss this when we have our training with all the GIT OICs. And then within the bureaus, we're going to have employee relations group who reviews common cards, provides training on that. We're going to have them come out to the areas and provide training on employee common cards. The second point that you brought up, the canned language, dealt with specifically having Newton area having more than one supervisor at a scene there. What happens within the search warrants when they're doing a search warrant is you have 2, 3, 4 supervisors there, but what we hadn't been doing was designating just one to be the supervisor overseeing the whole responsibility and that. So what we're doing, and as a result, all 3 or 4 supervisors are there doing their job. They're all doing the same things, and nobody's being tasked with just one responsibility. And as a result, the comment card, once you put it together, is basically you were at the roll calls, you did the debriefing, you were at the warrant service and everything. So everybody is at those particular points of the search warrant, and now there's nothing really separating everybody's performance. Everybody's basically doing the same thing. So what we've done is we're going to designate one sergeant, one supervisor, that's the supervisor overseeing the whole search warrant operation. And that will be the person upon who the comment card is issued. So it will be relative to that person. The other supervisor will be subordinate to that supervisor that's in charge. So it could be Sergeant 2, it could be Detective 2, Detective 3. But we'll have one person who's clearly in charge of overseeing that warrant. And that will be the person upon who the comment card gets issued to. And that, I believe, was going to help eliminate the canned language. The perception of it, totally get it. I understand how that would scare the heck out of you. And we got that piece when we looked at it. But, we were setting ourselves up for failure with the way we were dealing with it. And so the way to remedy that is by the steps that I've just described to you within there. Forgot. In terms of the logs, I would hate to see that we even fail this even if we went and audited today. We already discussed this. So we're working on that. Because we're having the officers checking in with the supervisors. Supervisors are checking in with the watch commander, but they're not putting the names in. So they're not saying, I met with Lieutenant Flores, or I met with Sergeant Perez, who's sitting in as a watch commander. Not having that piece. So the good thing is they're checking, and the bad thing is they're not checking in the way they're supposed to. The logs, in terms of what the information going into them, that's something that's relatively quick fix that I'm going to have supervisors on it. Because you're right, the biggest thing on this was an attention to detail. We haven't been paying that much attention to it, and for that I got to fall on the sword. It means that I wasn't leading the Bureau well enough and giving my captains enough direction and following up and making sure that we were doing that. So for that I fall on the sword. But I plan to get off the sword very quickly, and I'm and that's why they're here, because I have their assurances and I have their commitment that when we come back here, it's all going to be fixed. And it's going to be fixed simply because paying attention to detail, some of the systems that we're putting in place, and more importantly, it's going to address it department-wide. So when my peers come in, they won't have their emotional vest on. They'll just wear the regular ballistic vest when they come here for that. So we're working towards this either bureau-wide, and I think also just to piggyback on this, the good detective brought up, is when we have an audit that happens like in Central Bureau, let's take this audit in particular, what's going to happen within the Office of Operations is they're sending us the audit. We're going to take a look at it, but we're also project out wherever the deficiencies were to our commands to say, hey, take a look at this, and let's make sure that we're not having the same deficiency in here. Because we want to focus on is not necessarily what we're doing good, but where are we deficient? Because if we improve where we're deficient, we'll continue to improve our performance. Does that answer your question, sir? I'm not sure if I...
Yes and no. If you want, I'm happy.
No, it's just the one where how many were in command.
Yeah, I guess
during the consent decree and now post consent decree, how many are still?
Right. I much appreciate. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I think
I want to applaud you because you've given actually the most comprehensive response to any questions that I've ever asked about an audit in the short months that I've been here. So thank you very much for that. First of all, I want to say that, and secondly, I think I take the seriousness of you having your command staff here, because I think they frequently don't get to feel what you guys feel when we direct pain your way. So I think it's good for them to see that. I'm sorry.
So I appreciate your explaining, reminding us of your history and the consent decree, and I certainly understand that. And I appreciate the point you made about one of the lessons or one of the benefits from this audit is going to be department-wide, so that we shouldn't see an audit like this again, not only from Central, but from elsewhere. And I particularly appreciate your taking responsibility, as you did, for the failures here. So back to my question, you talked about a back-to-basics approach, which makes good sense to me. And I guess another way to ask my question is to encourage you to go deep on that. That is, I guess I wasn't asking so much about you or even the captains, but the lieutenants and the sergeants, clearly some of whom are new. And what is the department doing to make sure that those people who did not live through as command officers, as supervisors, did not live through the extraordinary attention being paid under the consent decree, and who as a result might naturally not appreciate the importance of these things. What are you doing, what's the department doing to make sure that those people are well aware of why these things are as important as they are?
Okay, fair enough. So that's going to be responsibility of the captains, lieutenants, and myself to push it down.
Right.
We're bringing in the first piece that we have to do is we have to bring in the supervision and leadership of those teams, because they're the ones that have to, first, they have to embrace it, they have to understand it, and then number two is they have to dispense it to their folks below. So we're bringing them in. We also, in Central Bureau, every 6 months, we have a training with lieutenants, and I have a training with Sergeant Twos. And specifically, we go over risk management issues, some leadership points. We've gone over use of force reports, intakes on biased policing complaints. Whenever we've had a situation like this on an audit, then we come in and address that. When we had the gang injunction concerns that popped up, we brought everybody in, brought in the city attorney. So we got the leadership teams on board. Now, we follow that up with, by us at the bureau level, doing our own follow-up inspections, not audits, but rather inspections, to go in and see where we're at. Our gang, my sergeant, lieutenant from the gang impact, the gang, our Bureau GED units are able to go in, We have formed some inspections where we go, I just bring in some people from my staff and we just go in and we check. Now, what we check is some of the things that we, lessons learned that we've got from IAID, and we go through there and specifically look for things. The other thing that we're doing is I usually meet once a quarter with all the GIT units. Just go out, talk to them, kind of remind them about some stuff, and then have a frank question and answer period with them. But the incumbent piece, the piece that will make this happen, is going to be the sergeants and the D2s that are out there. That's where the theory meets application piece comes in. And so we have to really push that through. We're doing it. I'm comfortable that we're doing that within the Bureau, and I would speculate that my peers are also doing the same. And I can tell you that I know after I walk out of here that they'll be doing the same once we go through in our discussion. So that's the biggest piece, is getting them through there. As far as the captains, if you want to know, I can tell you Mike Orb would have been a lieutenant at the time, sergeant at first when he's pushing through. He's the central captain. John McMahon would have been in the same role. He would have been a sergeant, would have been a lieutenant. Going to Art Sandoval, he was one of my assistant watch commanders at Northeast when I was a captain. He was also a gang sergeant when the consent decree was strong going through. Brian Pratt worked for Mr. Chaliff for a while, so as a lieutenant there before he went to use of force, and then he made captain stuff. Martin Baeza was a sergeant, and then he was a lieutenant at Northeast for me. He worked for Terry Hara, so he knows from the Bureau perspective on that. His partner, Gary Lopez, came to us from Metro with the K-9, so he's very aware of the consent decree with that. If you go to Northeast, Jeff Burt, prior GIT OIC, Detective CO, all during the times of the consent decree. You know, and then you go to Captain Prokop. I personally had selected him to be a GIT lieutenant at Northeast. From there, he made captain, so he was still in within the consent decree. And then his partner, Dave Kowalski at Newton, also replaced him at Northeast, where he's a GIT lieutenant, still within the consent decree piece. My vice coordinator, Cindy Bennett, who helps, she's one of the best when it came to the consent decree compliance when we were at Northeast, and that she reaches over and helps out with that avenue. My partner, as I said before, GIT lieutenant over at Rampart, as was I. And so we all were in a position where we were of leadership, in a position where we had to make the consent decree where the rubber met the road. And so we have that team. We have that balance in there. So there's no nobody going in the single-man formation off to the right saying, we're out of the consent decree. It's dead. We're not going to do anything. That's not the philosophy within Central Bureau. I can quite honestly tell you that's not the philosophy within Chief Beck's administration since I've been here.
Thank you, and I appreciate your mentioning P2s. I think you're right. At the end of the day, the changes here are going to happen primarily P2s, lieutenants, sergeants. And so the fact that you're focusing on that seems to me to be the right approach. It would have been nice if we weren't looking at this audit, or these are results in this audit.
I agree with you, sir.
Which you've described as embarrassing. And from our perspective, I would describe as disappointing. And my colleagues might have other words as well. But given the approach you're describing, I'm hopeful then that we would not see this sort of thing again, and that the concern I'm raising about awareness and sensitivity to the consent decree items ends up not being a concern that we need to have.
And from the department's perspective, we've been very, very clear since the transition agreement and the removal of the transition agreement that while the consent decree is no longer in place, it is still in effect, and that nothing has changed. And the reason that these audits are so tough is because of that. I mean, I could have IAAD do audits that find nothing, you know, like some places do, but we pick tough audits. There's no sense in doing audits unless we improve the process and put emphasis. And I guarantee that every one of these uniforms here, if they didn't have renewed emphasis before, they have it now. And that's That's why we do this. And, you know, we not only appreciate the commission's role in this, we relish it, because that's what makes this place grow. That's what makes this place move forward. And, you know, I fully intend that Central Bureau will move forward from this. And they will.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you.
I'm very encouraged by your leadership and your response.
Me too.
So I just want to thank you. Whatever's on my face, this is a smiling look. But I am I'm hopeful and encouraged. I have a greater sense of security having listened to you and seeing, in fact, that you brought your command staff here that will make sure that this is put into effect. So thank you very much. But before I get too effusive in my thanks and praise, of course, I'm going to wait for the next audit and report. But I am encouraged. I'm not going to walk away from here going, what the hell? So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, Chief Payson.
Chief Payson.
Commissioners, before we conclude, I'd like you to hear from Lieutenant Al Lopez from my office.
Thank you, Police Commission. To echo Chief Beck's comments, the Office of Operations is fully aware of the importance of the substantial compliance of the areas of the formerly covered by the consent decree. OO has understand that embraces the high standards and expectations of both the Police Commission and the Chief Police in terms of operational and administrative excellence. In this CAPA audit and inspection, although the majority of the inspection dimensions were well above the standard, we did recognize that there were some areas where we fell short. And they were thoroughly discussed in the presentation by Chief Perez. As a result, the Director of Office Operations has initiated a number of administrative safeguards to ensure future compliance in all areas, not only the NED CAP audit that was discussed. In forecasting for the future, with the completion of any audit conducted by IAID, whatever selected command is audited, we will forward that information to the respective bureaus, the other three bureaus that weren't audited, so they know what happened, they'll know the deficiencies, and they'll make appropriate adjustments as needed. In addition, we'll direct the commanding officers of those areas to discuss with their lieutenants, all lieutenants, the watch commanders, as well as the GIT lieutenants and the commanding officer detectives, so they're aware of what happened during these inspections by IAID. Based on this current audit, OO will direct the project to be initiated by all operations bureaus to cover this area of the CAPA audit. In addition to that, OOEAS will conduct quarterly inspections in the same areas as was covered by this CAPA audit to ensure compliance for future audits that may come up. Beginning with the upcoming deployment period, OO Bureau Chiefs and Bureau Commanders will be directed to personally meet with all the GIT lieutenants to discuss the accountability of this CAPA audit and make sure that the policy and procedures are discussed in all areas. Similarly, the director has already begun the educational process with detective COs. At all COMSTATs, the director has met with the detective COs following the COMSTAT, has had a one-on-one meeting with himself, the commanding officer of Detective Bureau, and those detective COs to discuss various issues relating to audits and detective-related issues as well. Likewise, the process, the director has already instituted in the precision driving, where we're trying to bring safeness in our driving. He is going to regulate that all future promotions for GIT lieutenants, issues that were documented within this CAP audit, are brought forward to see if the lieutenants who are oraling for the positions are aware of the policies and procedures covered within this CAP audit. Finally, at every direct reports meeting every Tuesday, the director is going to discuss with the deputy chiefs compliance for all related CAP audits to come in the future and ensure that they are discussed and they are then facilitated downward to the area commands. It's the director's position that we are not taking steps just merely to pass an audit, but this becomes a way of life that we continue to operate from here on out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is there an action on this?
Is there public comment on this?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We do have one public comment card. We have Mr. Pete White.
Pete White with the Los Angeles Community Action Network.
Morning.
I tend to disagree with Chief Perez that this is much more than spilled milk. In real time, an 8% supervisor evaluation compliance rate means there's nobody watching the farm, and the farmhands are running amok, poaching and rustling our communities. It also suggests that a leaderless culture exists at the bureau and division level that is devoid of checks and balances. From the community vantage point, this is realized or manifested in a LAPD us against poor communities warlike manner, where processes to vet use of force, civil rights violations, complaint processes, lethal force investigations are all merely swept under the rug or forgotten until and unless the community responds. This is a glaring failure, and points to other systemic failures of this department, systemic and cultural, I might add. When I think about and when I hear you, I don't think you really answered any of the questions. I watched Chief Paysinger sort of hold his hands in his head while you were talking, and I'm sure the community was very, very confused by what you said. It reminds me of Rafael Perez and what led to the Rampart scandal, this lack of oversight. It reminds me of Officer Nichols and his partner in Hollywood raping women, and there not being a real point of evaluation of supervisors who are duty-bound to understand what's going on in the precinct, the division, and the bureau level. Enough for the platitudes, the falling on swords, and the spilled milk. That means nothing to the community who in real time sort of holds the weight of your failures. Thank you.
We have no other comment cards.
We have an action to approve the report and executive summary. Do we have a motion?
Move approval of the item.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
Okay, we are now on item number 9, public comment period. We have 21 Thank public you. Comment cards. We'll begin with William Bill Watkins, followed by Mr. Herman, General Dogan, and Ari. William Bill Watkins. Mr. Herman. General Dogan. Go ahead, Mr. Dogan.
I'll set this tone for the public. Privacy threatened by drones. Accountability, reasonableness to our civil rights to protect and ensure equal access. But yet we're threatened by some issue on drones. It would be unreasonable not to protect the rights of us Americans under the performance as this agency represents we the public. Be not in prejudice, but react in our response. The public entitlement to accountability should come without judicated, unprejudiced law. We need to look at the real issues larger, which are the drones and our privacy. We have no privacy already. We're monitored by cameras. We're being investigated by officers who believe we're a threat to our society when we're just speakers, advocates on behalf of the public, public interest, we the public. So we entrust our grievance here in our actions of what we can say and what we cannot say. Incidentally, there is a lot of profit from security spy equipment. Profits are flipped over the massive, and we, the massive, are the taxpayers. We, the taxpayers. So let's protect our rights to our privacy, and let's have transparency. For the public will speak on behalf of this privacy that threatens us in our privacy, within our homes, within our communities, within our streets. And so, again, commissioners, thank you for this opportunity to be here to speak. Thank you, Attorney General, Inspector General, FBI, all those agencies who wish to conduct business on behalf of the public. Thank you.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is General Dogon, and I am representing the LACAN Civil Rights Committee, who is conducting a community investigation into the June 7th LAPD shooting death of Mr. O'Connor on 5th and San Pedro Street. While we know you would say this investigation is still ongoing, there are several issues that continue to arise in almost every police incident that occurred on Skid Row, such as 1, no SMART team response to 5150 calls; 2, continued use of force on nonviolent and or unarmed residents; 3, Mr. O'Connor has a history of climbing up buildings and trees on Skid Row, and which LAPD Central has responded to in the past with no incidents. So LAPD was fully aware of him and his MO. 4, LAPD Central pushing residents down the street, dispersing potential witnesses, and flat out refusing to interview eyewitnesses. There will be more speakers coming behind me to speak on this issue in more detail, and to speak on and against LAPD using drones, which only proliferate situations like I'm here to talk to today. And in closing, Chief Beck, this is the reason why I come here. It was important for you to come to Skid Row and meet with us to stop all these incidents from keep occurring.
All right.
Okay. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Ari, and I'm also representing the Civil Rights Committee at LACAN. I actually had the opportunity to interview several witnesses to the shooting death of Mr. Ocaño on June 7th off of 5th and San Pedro. So there was a couple things that were quite alarming about how this went down. Number one, SMART team are supposed to be plainclothes officers, and no witnesses ever saw any plainclothes officers or anybody in plain clothing approaching him, trying to talk to him, or even move up to the level that he was in. And all it was uniformed officers who scared him, which led him to move on top of up to the billboard. Residents also stated that when he was coming down from the billboard, he was waving a handkerchief, which suggests that he was surrendering to the LAPD and to SWAT team. Another thing about the SMART teams as well is that SWAT team was deployed and SMART team wasn't. So the first responders was LAPD, fire department, and SWAT team. And once again, no SMART teams was ever deployed. Your officers knew that he did suffer from mental illness, and therefore they should have known to deploy SMART team, the SMART team. Also, the LAPD refused to talk to witnesses. They refused to go out into the crowd, and I think they even refused to let media through, which led to this article from the LA Times, which claims that he was taken into custody, which wasn't true. He died at the scene, and he died at the scene from a gunshot, from the fall. He was shot and then he fell after he was surrendering to the officers. We demand a community meeting with internal affairs. We demand that this meeting be held at the James Woods Center and that investigators be there ready to interview eyewitnesses and continue this investigation. Commissioner Sobroff, you commended the officers for taking down the North Hollywood suspect who was in there without injury. He was an armed man inside a house, yet these officers took down this guy who was not armed, who was no threat to the community nor to any officers, which resulted in the death of a man who should not have been.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next five speakers are Deborah Burton, Adam, Walter Fears, Drones, and Pete White.
Let me get my glasses. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Deborah Burden. I am with the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. We don't trust LAPD. Just recently, LAPD was exposed to having violated the federal consent decree. LAPD officers sabotaged antennas on their squad cars that turned on video cameras and microphones to monitor them. They don't even care about federal consent decree. Seattle citizens was wary that officers would abuse the technology. So are we. We are concerned of putting drones in hands of officers who recently destroyed antennas, interfered with cameras in police cars. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm going to go back to the incident on June 7th. My name is Walter Fears. I'm a Skid Row resident since 2005. I wanted to speak on the use of force as a de-escalation or a deterrent on nonviolent offenders. I believe we met with Mr. Bustamante 2 years ago at a resident meeting with several officers from Central Division, and we had we met after a recent shooting of a police officer of an unarmed man again. Here we are again. But one of the questions we asked was about how is excessive force used, and we were given these reasons as to why. SCI was implemented in 2006, and along with that was a SMART team. Since I've been a resident of Skid Row, there have been 5 deaths from policemen of unarmed men, most of them mentally disabled, all black, all dead. And never once has a SMART team responded to either of those. So I took it upon myself to look at the national scope of this thing, and there was a recent report that came out that last year alone there were 313 black males shot and killed by police officers. This is a trend. This is not only just happening here, it's happening nationwide. It's the criminalization of black and brown bodies. That's what's happening. So what happened yesterday in Las Vegas? That citizens taken into their own hands policing the police.
Thank you.
And our community.
Thank you.
Is going to start policing the police ourselves.
You can stop.
Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Adam. I'm with the Los Angeles Community Action Network. We sat and listened to you grill these people about this audit and just accept. I hope not blindly that there was 100% compliance with civil rights, because it's not true. I mean, if there was 100% compliance with civil rights in the Central Bureau, LA CAN wouldn't need to exist. We hear the stories from the streets. We experience the violations of civil rights, which is why we stand with the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition, which is why we do not want the police department to have drones. We cannot even trust police officers to run a camera on their car. 1/3 of these cameras were disabled by your officers in clear violation of the consent decree. And you well know this, Chief Beck, you know, yet you still play this game. You are accountable to us, integrity in all we do, to protect and serve. I don't know how many times I've been up here and quoted this back to you. I don't even understand why I do it. Because you don't listen, Chief. And Commissioners, you don't listen to us. You're here to protect us. We need you to back us up. We say no to drones in the hand of the police because we cannot trust the police. And I hope we can trust this commission to be intelligent enough to see that that is the facts that we live with right now. And that entire audit was, pardon my French, bullshit. All power to the people. Y'all have a good one.
off.
So Pete White again from the Los Angeles Community Action Network. And just quickly, we continue to come before you encouraging, demanding immediate intervention into the way policing happens in downtown Los Angeles against poor, predominantly black people. And that continues to seemingly fall on deaf ears. And I should be surprised, but I'm not, when I think about the numbers of hours that residents have come before you, have taken out time in the morning to address you, to say, come. Come to the community. Come and listen to the ways we want to help change the conditions in our community and the way it's policed. I should be surprised, but I'm not surprised, because I know how this department addresses racism from the top. Most recently and notably, I watched Chief Beck override your decision to release an officer who, on tape, loudly spewing racist, crazy madness while he was drunk. And we retained that officer. So that speaks to the culture of racism, and it speaks to how we sort of hold that. And I challenge you to do something different about that. The most recent killing at the hands of LAPD of a known person of color with mental illness, the most recent killing has got to be the end of the road. You have got to come out and say, Chief Beck, you need to go to the community. We all need to go to the community. We need to pull these officers out. We need to create a system of accountability that works for those who we supposedly protect and serve. We're going to continue to build a community of resistance and resilience, and we're going to continue to come back and demand you do something different. All power to all people.
Okay, the next five speakers, Jamie Garcia, Jed Poole, Alani Bonilla, Ronald Collin, and Shani Casella.
Can the clock get reset? It's okay, thank you. Hi, I'm Jamie Garcia. I'm a member of the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. So I've come here to address the latest acquisition of drones from Seattle. I'm a nurse in the city of Los Angeles, and I'm saying no to drones. We can't allow LA to be the dumping ground for other cities. Seattle's community made it very clear, drones are not acceptable. You don't need to assure us that you are working with privacy advocates or the ACLU. We are here to tell you to scrap the program. Despite attempts to make the issue of drones seem like something new, we know for a fact that earlier in February, LAPD was in Israel looking at drones called HoverMass. HoverMass is not only capable of spying, but can also be used for crowd control. Please don't say there is this is a transparent process going on in attempts to seek community input. LAPD never sought community input when they went to Israel looking at drones. We also need to look at the use of drones in the larger context of LAPD's architecture of surveillance, spying, and infiltration. Trapwire, Stingray, high-definition cameras, automatic license plate readers, special order ones, suspicious activity reports, iWatch, are all key tactics that LAPD uses to gather information on the public and invade our privacy. I won't really mention the federal consent decree, because I think a lot of people are basically saying they don't trust you. They don't trust that your officers will monitor themselves, so there's no reason to be redundant on that point. Finally, as a nurse, I don't think we can address the current highlighted acts of violence that obstruct our community and others abroad with the continued militarization of the police and LAPD. Drones will not make people safer or save lives. We need long-term, sustainable change. We need services for our community. We need housing, hospitals, community centers, schools, park, and more. You take more than half of the city's budget, and we need that to heal the community.
Hi, my name is Jed Poole. I'm with the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. I'm also a member of the Los Angeles Catholic Worker. We run a soup kitchen down in Skid Row, Gladys and Six. I'm here today because the issue with the drones, I have many issues with it. One that became obvious today is the trust issue between the commission here and the LAPD and what exactly they would be used for. My other issue as well is the amount of money that goes into that. Like, yeah, we got these drones for free. Did we get every piece of equipment that also comes with them to make sure that they are running properly and to maintain them? I highly doubt it.
Also, in order to set up a group here at Los Angeles Police Department to actually run these drones, that would take years. You'd have to outsource a contract with somebody else in order to do that. I know how military contracts work. And that will cost the city at least millions of dollars a year, if not going into tens of millions of dollars a year. When I'm looking around and I see parks that don't have bathrooms that work down on Skid Row, and I see schools lacking funding that can't even afford books that kids have to share in this city, I just don't see the expense relative. I do not have the trust with the Los Angeles Police Department. And I just, as a citizen, if you guys are saying right now, you know, from what I read, that you guys want to get feedback from the public, so you guys want to do what you feel the public wants to do about it, right? Or are you actually endorsing it yourself? What I don't want to see is a campaign from you guys trying to push these drones onto us. Let us make that decision. How about you put it on the ballot without any money going behind any ad campaigns and see what the people have to say about it? Thank you.
My name is Alani Bonilla, and I'm with the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. And I currently have a lawsuit pending against an officer of the law who actually slammed me against the wall inside of a hospital. And it was caught on camera, which was later tampered with. So I have firsthand experience of how your officers are protected by not only the departments, but also the courts when they violate human rights and abuse their power. These audit results that I just heard about your department not complying is not surprising to me. It's not a shock. It's just, it actually confirms the lack of confidence that I have in your department. And, you know, knowing that you're not compliant with the financial disclosure, you know, instead of looking at what are the missing pieces, look at why are these pieces missing. We're going to continue to expose the abusive power of your department. We're going to continue to be here loud and proud. And so I just want to know, you know, with I hope you know that with these free drones that you've gotten, it is definitely a waste of resource. The cost to prepare the infrastructure technology to see these drones feed, fly them, train the officers, maintain, repair, and upgrade the drones, this is all money that you don't even have control of how you're even disclosing this information. So I want to know, what are you going to do about it to save yourself from yet another lawsuit by saying no to these drones? What are you going to do about this issue here that's at hand? Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Ron Collins. I'm an organizer with the Bus Riders Union and a member of the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. And I'm here to say no to drones. Why? Because it is a clear violation of our privacy, it is a waste of resources, and is a continued criminalization of our communities. If you go into most of our communities, particularly in South and East Los Angeles, you're going to hear a symphony of sirens and helicopters. And now you want to add the sounds of drones to that? You're turning our communities into a war zone. That's not what our communities need. What we need is more programs. We need this money going into things that are actually going to help to turn over our communities and actually give people a chance to have proper housing, proper food, proper transportation. This money can be better spent rather than spending it on drones. Again, it's a criminalization of our communities. It's a violation of our privacy, and we need it to stop. No drones here in Los Angeles. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Shawnee. I am a proud Los Angelino and a resident of the Valley. First off, I'd like to draw attention to the now two vacant rows here as a testament to our so-called leadership of our law enforcement and the commitment and concern for our communities. So there you go. I'm deeply troubled by the dramatic expansion of the surveillance state and the ongoing militarization of our law enforcement agencies in general. Transforming our streets and our communities into war zones and creating and fostering a culture of fear that suppress natural society. I'm here today to express my concern over the use of drones. I fear the use of these weapons in convergence with other technologies, including facial recognition, thermal imaging, monitoring of conversations and behaviors, and the Pandora's box of moral and ethical quandaries that employing these dangerous technologies in civilian and urban settings will unleash. I don't want a Big Brother eye in the sky with the capacity to do a virtual strip search of my life from above, trolling the skies with unregulated impunity. This terror from above is a very real intrusion, into our lives and a violation of our expectation of privacy and shredding of the constitutional and human rights. No drones, not now, not ever.
The next five speakers are Martin Comwell, JoJo Smith, Leslie, Esteban Gill, and Thelmy Perez.
Hello, my name is Martin Conwell. I represent the Hospitality Kitchen, the Catholic Workers, and I came here to talk against the drones. I think you already have enough surveillance equipment without adding drones to the situation. People's right to privacy is in jeopardy here. And there's an old saying that most wise people say, if you want peace, practice justice. So I ask you to put as much money into fair and equal law enforcement as you possibly can. And when you do that, the justice trickles down and becomes peace and harmony in the long run. So if you want peace, practice justice. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Leslie with the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. I live in LA. I'm not going to tell you where because you might send a drone. You smile, but I'm not. Maybe you don't see it from up there. The answer is a ban on all drones, public and private. Here's a story you won't believe, but we do. What if, while chasing down someone in my backyard, your drone operator catches me smoking a non-medical bowl in my living room? She's a cop. She sees something, so she says something. It goes in a database somewhere. When the cops or DHS want an excuse to snatch me, there it is. They assault me, drag me through the system, and cage me. You say up there you will have policies that keep that from happening. But policies get changed. Policies get trumped for all sorts of reasons. You already have a compliance and accountability problem. Sitting up there, maybe you don't see it. The residents of LA don't trust Chief Beck's LAPD. We see what I'm telling you, that you're building a surveillance state. This one time, tell us you're not. No drones.
My name is Esteban. I'm with the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. I think it's been repeated over and over again here that the direction this department is moving in is one in which globally police are moving in. And it's a scary direction because what it entails is a counterinsurgency program against us, against the public. A lot of the drone policies or even the iWatch program, suspicious activity reporting, what they are is almost a mirror in miniature of what our foreign policy looks like for the last 40 years, and now it's coming home. Not only is it waste of resources, and as we've learned in the last 40 years, imperialism doesn't benefit the citizens of empire, and this isn't going to benefit our communities. It's going to waste our resources, and it's going to lead to a lot more intrusion, a lot more violence, a lot more encroachment on our lives. And the other thing is that it doesn't work out for empire. Counterinsurgency programs most often end in failure. And each and every time, whether it was Vietnam or Afghanistan, Iraq, they've kicked you in the teeth and you've gone home. And if you do it to our communities, we'll kick you in the teeth and send you home. And that's what we want now. Let's not lose teeth over this. Let's invest resources in our communities where they're needed and not in more watching and not in more guns. Thank you.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Thelmy Perez. I'm with the LA Human Right to Housing Collective and the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. I'm here to oppose the use of drones in Los Angeles, in California, in the United States, in the world. Let's be clear about what drones are. Drones are war machines. Drones are killing machines. Drones are an invasion of our privacy. They're the final nail in the coffin of our civil liberties. We don't trust LAPD. We don't trust LAPD with the cameras you have, and we certainly don't need one hovering above us in the sky. In accepting these drones, it's not just a terrible injustice, but it is a declaration of war by the LAPD against communities of color, against the citizens of Los Angeles, against the citizens of the United States and of the world. So you have the opportunity today to say, LA will not continue to spy on its citizens in this way. LA will not use machines of war against the citizens of our city. You have the opportunity to join Seattle, to join Yosemite, to join other communities across the country, across the world, who oppose the use of drones in this kind of invasion into our personal and private lives and into the affairs of communities and of people who are trying to get by every day. So I urge you to say no to the use of drones. We are opposed to them, and to take a stand for the citizens of Los Angeles and of the world. Thank you.
Our last four speakers, Hamid Khan, Ted Hayes, Wanda Solomon, and George Harrell.
Good morning, Commissioners. Hamid Khan with the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition and the Los Angeles Community Action Network. So I guess the whole issue of public hearings have begun. Whether you hold them formally or informally, today we're here to put the LAPD on notice that we are going to say no to drones, whether you reach out to people or not. I think what you've heard today is a resounding declaration that there is no trust in this department. There is a complete lack of transparency. There is a violation of consent decrees going on. The audits that come out are not even, you know, just not even poor. They are just ridiculous. I mean, you know, we had an audit done even on the SAR program, which became a procedural audit. So then you want us to come back and take rejects from other cities. That this is now, what we are saying is that Los Angeles is going to become a dumping ground for other cities who don't want these equipment. So again, whether you hold these public hearings or not, our advice to you would be put a stop to it now. Just kill it right now. Because this is going to just really irk a lot of people. A lot of people are going to rise up. If today you had about 15 or 20 speakers, you're going to have 200 and you're going to have 2,000. And then you'll have to see like what decisions you will make. So this is, just consider this as a preemptive move from the communities of Los Angeles, reaching out to you, reaching out to your good side, reaching out to your rational side, that don't go down that road. I have a personal issue with this as well, because the country that I was born and raised has become a playground for destruction by drones, Pakistan. The town that I would go and get sandals for the summertime has been wiped out. It has become a big crater over there. So it's not just destruction of people, it is a complete violation of our privacy. It leads to racial profiling. The chief had sent his people into Israel and looking at these drones, and those drones were dual purpose, not only for spying and surveillance, but also for crowd control.
Thank you.
Ted Hayes.
Penal Code Section 851.5 requires that the information about bails be posted in the booking area. So you have an item 8B, a thing about how you provide assistance to arrestees by putting the information in the lobby. Well, that's not where the arrestees are, is it? So who's going to be out there to see all these things about bail bonds? The more important thing is I have never sued the city. That's what happens when you sue the police department. But over anything, but I swear I will get a restraining order to review this, because here's what you did. You apparently, because I came late, passed this without my being present. You called it out of order. That allows you to defeat this thing about whoever should a member of the public feel the need to address the matter while the meeting, a card may be obtained and completed, blah. Well, if you do it before people get in here, because you don't open the door until 9:30, there were no agendas in the lobby. No one knows what's going on because you don't give them time and access. Back to the 851.5. You don't keep your cell phone or the information in it when you're arrested. You cannot make a 411 phone call in jail. There are no telephone directories in jail. So all this information about bail bonds and bondsmen is never available to you. So you have to consider that. I think you ought to go and inspect that situation and completely observe it. So what's this nonsense about putting something in a lobby showing where all of the bail bond agencies in the city are? That's nonsense. I would like to have a more thorough, enlightened discussion about this. Please assist me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Wanda Solomon. First, I'm going to give you the good news, and then I'm going to follow up with all my colleagues here about the drones. I will be graduating from Southwest College this afternoon. Good. So I would like to... I was just saying that to say this, still I rise. And my whole point is this about education. And you're all well-educated people sitting up there. You got your degrees, your big shots, you know, and you got your PhDs and whatever else is required. And I'm climbing the ladder the hard way. But I'm making it, and still I rise, and I'm going to rise to the top of the ladder. I'm going to keep on rising. Because one day, I don't know if I will ever sit where you're sitting, but I will sit in the seat of the community and advocate on behalf of my children and my children's children and their children. So I just wanted to let you know the colors that I wear are just not for color, per se. It's for the blood, sweat, and tears. The bombs bursting in air? Yeah, we're going to hear that. If these drones are going to be pouring all around above us. Right now, I don't hear no bombs bursting in there right now. I hear helicopters every night. I hear these sirens all up and down my street. So what do you really want, Chief Beck? If you really want a second term, you're going to have to put a little bit more grit into it. Just a little bit more grit into it. Because, you know, I vote. I'm a registered voter. I'm that's my duty. So I'm just here to let you know, as a parent, I'm concerned about the children. What's going to happen to our children? Millions of children out there, not just on Skid Row, everywhere. And I'm very concerned about our babies. So I just wanted to make that point clear about why I stand with L.A. Can. We fight for human rights. Do you understand that?
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Good morning.
Morning.
Chief Beck, to the commissioners that are present. Beautiful people. All right. My name is George Herrod. I'm known as Pancake, you know, and it's not just the G8, now G20. So I'm a member of L.A. CAN, and I'm going to throw back to the Tom Redden, Tom Bradley days, Sam Yorty days. I attended Dorsey High School. And I'm a friend, classmate, basketball player with some of your department members, Daryl Maxwell, some of you know him, Paul Lawson at Southwest Division, Willie White, and a few others there. And I'm just would like to extend a personal invitation to Chief Beck to maybe schedule a town hall meeting with the downtown residents. I'm personally requesting that. Chief Beck, to kind of dialogue, have a town hall meeting with the residents of and representatives of downtown LA, or as in other communities. And I would like to offer just a definition of what real accountability is. It's to measure the conduct, actions against a prescribed set of standards. And I'm also anti-drone, so thank you for this short space.
Thank you, sir, very much.
That is the final comment card. We are now on item number 10, closed session. The Board of Police Commissioners will now recess into closed session to discuss item numbers 10, A, B, C, and D in accordance to various government codes.